Hey, what's up, everybody? Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Matt Mania. I am Mega Ran, a teacher, a rapper, a hero. Most importantly, a wrestling fan. And so, I've been doing these podcasts once a month, usually after a pay-per-view event that I watch and I talk about it. This time, I decided to go for two this month because we're leading up to one of the big events in WWE's pay-per-view cycle, which is Royal Rumble. I felt like it was just too much time between what I was doing and what I was trying to do and bringing you guys this cool podcast, because a lot of people ask me about more episodes. So I figure while I'm home, not doing a whole lot, I'll give you another episode. Now, please be aware that this does not mean I will be doing this every month, because I'll be touring. In fact, I'm actually working on another tour right now. This is the first time I'm actually going to talk about it, but these shows will be announced soon, so I might as well talk about them. January 17th, I'll be at TaiyuCon in Mesa, Arizona. Cool convention, I love it, at the Mesa Convention Center. I had a great concert there last year, and I'm looking forward to that again. Then I'll be on the road. January 29th, Albuquerque. January 30th, Santa Fe. January 31st, Salt Lake City. February 1st, Denver. February 2nd, not sure. February 3rd, San Jose. February 4th, San Fran. February 5th, Sacramento. And then we're going to do Reno, maybe even Vegas, and some more stuff in Arizona. So I'll be joined by some special guests, but look for an announcement on that real soon on my Twitter page, which is at MegaRan, not Meg Ryan. All right, y'all. So on this episode of Matt Mania, we're going to be talking about some history. And I'm a big history buff, what can I say? And 17 years ago, on this week, one of the pivotal events that shifted the Monday Night Wars in the WWE's favor forever happened, which was the Finger Poke of Doom. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling. We're going to talk about Brock Lesnar. We're going to talk about Chris Jericho. We're going to talk about, most importantly, the Royal Rumble match, which is happening, and the stakes are now higher than ever. So I want to thank you all for tuning in. I also have a special guest, a good friend of mine, a student of the wrestling culture and business sides of things. So he brings a really, really dope outlook and perspective to things. So my good friend, straight from London, UK, Michael Burhan, is going to be reporting live from a park bench. No, really, he recorded from a park bench. So he was outdoors in London, and so you'll hear some sights and sounds of the city, so I want to apologize for that up front, but it's gonna be a fun time. We get to talk about a lot of good stuff, so thank you once again for tuning into the first of maybe a few bi-monthly episodes of Matt Mania. See you guys in a second. Peace.
Hey, party people, it's Kate Murdoch here, and I want to talk to you about something real fresh, real new that myself and Mega Ran are doing now, and it involves you, the fans. Myself and Mega Ran just launched a Patreon, a monthly way for you all to subscribe to us and what we do for as little as $1 a month. You'll get free exclusive downloads, a guaranteed song a month, and if you pledge at the $10 level, you'll get a free project a month, whether it be something we do together, whether it's something solo, a side project that I engineer or produce, it's guaranteed exclusive for you Patreon supporters. So, if you really like what we do, then this is the time to get down and join us. We are trying to bring back that Nintendo Fun Club vibe, because this is essentially a fan club for the real fans. So check it out, patreon.com/bitsandrhymes. That's patreon.com/bitsandrhymes. And now back to your regularly scheduled.
Hey, everybody, welcome to another action-packed episode of Matt Mania.
This is now episode 4 or something. And you are my second special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please meet a good friend of mine, all the way from the jolly old UK, my friend Michael Burhan. Hey, say what's up to the people.
Oh, hey, what's up? And you can hear the jolly old UK behind me. There's a train and I think an ambulance went past. None of that was my fault. I'm just going to say that right now. So,
are you not over there destroying things?
Yeah, I had this mission to be like Godzilla and go, and like grab damsels and climb tall buildings and stuff. I came over and I was hit with the flu for 3 weeks. No. So I've been bedridden. And then eventually after the doctor was like, oh, just take some pills and sleep, you'll be fine. I was like, okay, no, got to get up. So I'm out and about now and doing my thing and traveling around the jolly old London area. And it's to say it's good to be home, I think I enjoyed the States a lot more.
Really? I was going to ask how was your trip to the States? You did a whole bunch of stuff. You got around to a lot of the must-see areas.
My biggest happy place was, I think, the Rocky statue. I didn't like the fact that they replaced it with some guy choking his chicken at the top. Literally, that's what it is, guys. If you haven't seen it, go to the top of the stairs and there's this dude choking a chicken at the top of the stairs, which I think is sacrilege.
Wow. I didn't even notice that. I'm born and raised in Philly, and of course we never go there when you live there, but when I go back and visit, I usually take whoever I'm with there to the steps when we run up.
Oh, definitely. And you've got to run the steps. I think even people who've said that, people who've lived there, went, I've gone to steps, but I've never run the steps. Run the motherfucking steps. I was full of Denny's at the time. And my fiance, well, my now fiance, is filled my stomach up to the point where I could barely move. And I decided, no, I'm going to run these steps. I ran all the way up the steps. Didn't, like, pass out, luckily. And then I saw that statue and I was like, this is the reason why people don't want to run these steps. That thing is fucking scary.
It really is. And first of all, I got a huge beef with you for even going to Philly and eating freaking Denny's. Like, there's too much great fattening food in America. You did not have to eat Denny's. I mean, come on.
She took me there. This is the thing. You're only as good as your guide. And my lovely fiance took me to Denny's. Then I had a Subway when I took her to work.
Subway? Come on. Subway. You can get that in London. Come on.
Yeah, but the Subway here is so shit. It's like really small. It makes your Subway makes my Subway look like a hot dog. That's not bad. And they give you extra on everything. And especially with the English accent. If you've got an English accent or any sort of accent and there is someone serving you food, you ham that fucking accent up. Because these people will be like, oh my God, that's so sexy.
Here's more. They're giving you everything. You get all the free extras.
Yeah, I went to go see Star Wars in the cinema there. And the moment I basically, the girl's like, I can't understand you. I was like, oh, it must be the English accent. Wink, wink. I had food on top of food given to me on top of my popcorn. And I was just like, motherfucker, what the hell?
Yeah,
these people are trying to kill me.
Yeah. Philly is known as the fattest city in America. And you probably see why since you were there, because the food there is ridiculous. I mean,
it is.
Well, I could definitely talk about food all day. However, this is not a food podcast. I'll say that for my next podcast endeavor, Grub Mania. But anyway, Michael Burhan, I want to talk to you really quick about your history with wrestling and where you see this wrestling thing going right now. You're kind of like me. You've been in through the thick and thin, the good and bad. And so I just want to get a little bit of your history of being a fan and even a participant, apparently.
Yeah, in basically, if for those of you who don't know me, I trained for Alex Shane and the Frontier Wrestling Alliance. I'm a former professional wrestler myself. I ended up getting injured to the point where my ankle broke. I managed to get in at a time where you had to pay your dues. And the problem with paying your dues is you work hurt. You know, you don't want anyone taking your spot. I was one of those that went under pressure. And because of that pressure, I ended up tearing the ankle off the bone. So I ended up in a big cast on crutches. I had actually, and I will say this, one of the best rookie years known to British wrestling history, because I made a lot of contacts. So I wrestled Eddie Guerrero at the Crystal Palace Arena. I did a dark match with him. He was a great guy. And I could say, you know, someone that I consider one of my best friends out there, you know, rest in peace. He was a guy that was on the journey. And I then, you know, was spotted to go to like Mexico and do some lucha training because they felt that I could be a lucha, even though most of my stuff was kind of more Smash Mouth, Japanese Smash Mouth style of wrestling. Mm. And I was also picked to go to a couple of Japanese tours as well before the injury, of course. Once the injury happened, they will lock you out. People won't talk to you. And it's one of those things. They saw potential. I'm proud of what I did. But in terms of what I wanted to do, I never accomplished the big goal, which was to always work at WrestleMania, have my dream match. Hey, you know, you never know. You know, if all this acting stuff works out, I might get that, you know, I might get to tag with Stardust or something.
You may get that call again.
Yeah, so never say never. You know, at the end of the day, one door closes, another door opens. Because of my wrestling background, I managed to get into TV and film. And to say I've never been happier is, you know, even though I'm not kind of at the upper echelon of things, I still managed to do some good and, you know, meet myself, of course, and loads of other friends and acquaintances via that industry path. I fell in love with it when I was, I believe, 13 years old. Like, I watched WrestleMania 7. It was the standard Vince McMahon match, you know, the Hulk Hogan, the American blue-eyed savior of the United States versus the, you know, the Iraqi turncoats, Sergeant Slaughter. I love that shit, man. I ate that shit up. I basically, it was one of my favorite things in the world. When they went through the new generation, the Attitude Era, I sat through it. And I'm going to say this, a lot of people are going to hate me because I'm too controversial when it comes to this. I felt the best thing about the Attitude Era was the ability for the guys to tell their own stories. I felt everything else was bollocks. You know, the whole, like, let's put your body on the line, hardcore this, hardcore that. Because of that era, you have guys like Mick Foley, who's basically can never wrestle again. You know, you, how many of those guys from that era can you actually count on your finger that are still alive today?
Oh, man, not a lot.
Yeah, and a lot of it was due to the drug addictions, the painkiller addictions. And if you've read the biographies, you've watched the documentaries, you'd see all this stuff where these guys were going through because they didn't know, you know, they left from right in a sense. This is how they made money. And once it all came crashing down and they left the company and the company was transitioning into a new way, most of these guys couldn't adapt. I think there's only a few guys who successfully adapted from the Attitude Era kind of style of wrestling through to the new age. And that was like Shawn Michaels, Steve Austin, kind of in a promo level, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, even though I hate the guy, you know, he's one of the guys who managed to transition, Edge and Christian at the time, before they had to call it quits. You know, there's not many guys had that versatility to kind of say, right, we can transition to this now, and stop using curse words and stop doing this. You know? And that just shows, really.
I still felt like during the Attitude Era, a lot of the wrestling was better.
Yeah.
You know, guys were still wrestling. I mean, there were, of course, the Stone Colds and the guys who were just a lot of punches and kicks. But I do feel like when I went back, you know, because at this time I was doing a lot of flipping back and forth between WCW and WWE.
Yeah.
And but I can look back and say, you know what? WCW was kind of getting over on just having familiar names. But the action and the wrestling was still better, I thought, on WWF, because I feel like maybe they had more to prove. You know, as the underdog, you always work a little harder.
You know? No, that's true. It's like they wanted it more. It's the same thing. Like, I remember when I first met you, and well, consistently what you do now, you work harder than your average rapper. You know, if someone came to like one of the big guys or the big indie guys and said, you need to work this schedule and you've got to put out this album, and you've got to do everything you can to attract your fans, most of these guys will be batting their eyelids at you going, motherfucker, what? No, you know, and it's, you know, you're crazy. What the hell? And it's about that. You've got to have that gut instinct and that passion in order to kind of go forth. And you're right. A lot of the guy matches excelled in terms of the mid card and the lower card of wrestlers. But also you had a lot of more titles back then as well. You had the European Championship, which was considered the lower card title. Then you had the hardcore title, which was considered the lower card championship.
Yeah.
you know, and there was so much going on that, and also you had people who got over, like Sable, who was just basically boobs. So I'm, you know, as I said, I'm glad for the foundations that it laid, but I'm also glad that the Attitude Era is gone, because you see guys are a lot more healthier now. The WWE is doing a lot more concussion and impact testing. And to any faults that the WWE have, they do take care of their superstars. These guys have 401ks now, you know, downside wow. guarantees.
Wow.
So they're living the life, and they're living it the right way, at least.
They are. Wow. Okay, so overall then, I just want to get your opinion on the 2010s of WWE, specifically the last couple years, I guess. You know, I consider this the no competition era, if there was a name for this era.
Do you mean the age of Jobber H? I think it was like the shovel age, where he was just, they set all these challenges up and they had them built up to the point where the guy could have won. They were so credible, and then Triple H just beats them.
He just beats everybody.
Yeah.
But this era of wrestling, you know, nowadays, what do you think about the PG era of WWE? Like, what's your opinion overall on the program?
I like it, but I feel that they're too constrained in terms of the athletes. They don't allow people to do what they should do. And I can use a prime example. You have the New Day, and then you have everybody else, like the Divas, for instance. Most of these new girls are up on the roster, don't want to do anything. It's not because they're lazy. It's more because they're afraid of ruffling feathers. So the Divas Revolution turns into a bunch of matches with girls that look kind of shitty because nobody knows what the fuck is going on. They're choreographed wrong. You know, they're written wrong. It's to the point where it's gotten so forced and overfed like a Christmas chicken. Yeah, you feel like the thing's going to burst. I think they need to kind of, if they could take anything from the Attitude Era, or even from the main eventers, is to let people speak their minds. Let people get, you know, you get a storyline, get a set path, you sit in there as a writer with both the wrestlers and say, right, we're going to build up to this storyline, but I need you to basically make this work. Here's the bullet points. You go out there and you talk. Like, for instance, you can tell they've laid off on Roman Reigns a little more now, and Reigns can actually talk and be himself.
Yeah.
Where before the whole like Reigns era of terror, because they were basically getting him to say like Scooby-Doo and Suffering Succotash and stuff. And it's just like, who are you? You know, it's, and that's where they're kind of, in everything good that Vince has done, I think Vince can't let go of the fact that he doesn't understand what's going on currently. And the problem is, none of the writers are kind of happy enough to sit there and go, hi, look, I can tell you this. This isn't working. Instead, they're like, you what? I'm sorry, I'm here behind your butt. And they'll just sit there and not say anything. And it's, at the end of the day, your job is to make these wrestlers look good. And the best way to do that is bullet points. We're not doing a TV show. We're not doing a soap. Nothing's scripted. Nothing is a foregone conclusion. Mm-hmm. You have to let these guys work. That's how they're trained to do it. That's in NXT, which, you know, I have to admit, I love NXT. It's everything I wanted the WWE version of ECW to be.
Yeah.
But that's what that does. It's allowed each and every one of these talents to grow and become professional wrestlers, rather than teach you the WWE style and then throw you out there in the deep end and say, oh, that didn't work. Well, that wasn't my fault. It's the children's fault. It's always the children's fault.
That's a really good point. So speaking of NXT, before I get into my topics of the day, since cool. I brought it up, what do you like about NXT, and who do you like in NXT to come up to the main roster and kind of kill it?
Well, at the moment, I think they need to stop taking people from NXT because they're thinning out the roster a bit more. But if I could pick, I would pick Enzo and Big Cass, because for two guys that didn't know how to wrestle, to come together and gel so well, create these characters, and, you know, even with Carmella, who is terrible in the ring, they managed to make this kind of team, this Jersey Shore-like team, but it's hilarious at the same time because you can see it, you know, it's very realistic.
Yeah.
Because like if you go to someone's house a night in Brooklyn, you know, and you listen to the way these guys talk to their sisters and their family, you would think of Enzo and Big Cass.
Right.
And they've got a snazzy little catchphrase. They are a really good team. They gel really well. They could be a very good opponent for New Day if the WWE allow them to be, as long as you let them go on the main roster and do their thing. Don't stop them. Don't try and cut them off from the danglies. Let them do what they do best. And I think they would be great. Finn Balor, of course, as well. There are rumors that he's destined to move up soon, so we could see a title change at some point. And with the other rumor about AJ Styles maybe coming to NXT as well, he's allegedly been signed with a few other members of Bullet Club.
Yeah.
I could see it, you know. And as far as I'm concerned, the stars are aligning for NXT. And as you know, the main thing I like about it, it's no matter the fact that it's taped like TNA is, it has a hell of a lot more quality to it. It's got the WWE development, like TV, kind of the HD, the beautiful, like, camera positionings and stuff like the other shows have, but it's more closed in. It has that ECW feel of like a small independent company. And it's becoming the place to work, you know, and the WWE is basically doing what they should be doing with Raw and SmackDown, which is promoting it, allowing the talent to kind of shine on the pay-per-views. Hell, we had a women's match highlight a pay-per-view.
Yeah, first time in history.
First time in history, and it freaking knocked my socks off.
And it rocked. It was a 5-star match.
Yeah.
I never thought I'd see that, so I just started watching the Breaking Ground show, and I'm on the episode where Triple H talks to them about that and asks them to do it. And, like, I could just feel the goosebumps, like, whoa, like, we're about to make history, you know? And they tore it down. I have some friends who think, and I just want to get into this before I go on. I have friends who think NXT is good, but it just looks so great in comparison to current WWE programming. What do you think about that?
I say hogwash. I say it's everything that the WWE should be, which is off the cuff. You've got interesting talents. You've got guys who can get themselves over and you're allowing them to shine. Like Samoa Joe is not the WWE system guy. You know, he's a guy who's got in there, who's willing to make the change. You've got like guys like Kevin Owens who came from there and made a splash quickly. And the reason why he made such a splash was because of the fact that he was allowed to be himself. All this malarkey about, oh, it's because the product's terrible and NXT just looks like the light and shining, you know, the end of the tunnel. That's not the case. If they did what they were doing with NXT on the main roster, I guarantee you people would watch. And they're slowly getting there. They're slowly starting to adjust and understand now that the audience doesn't want to see the authority trying to play heel and face every 5 minutes. You know, is he heel? Is he face? Is Stephanie going to be like on her time of the month again? So is she going to be angry? It's kind of one of those things where you now have your heels. You know who the heels are. You know who the face is. It's clear. It's solidified. It's simple. And this is the thing for anything you ever do in life, folks. Keep it simple. The WWE kind of overcomplicated things and tried to overcomplicate everything by throwing at the dartboard and seeing what sticks. So, in my opinion, simplistic. You know, Vince McMahon versus Roman Reigns. It's pure gold. Booking-wise, it works. And the reason why it works, you've got a man who can sell. Right, a 70-year-old man who can sell on that mic. He doesn't have to be in the ring. He just has to sell. You know, and he goes in there and he's like, I'm going to make your life hell. Roman smiles, crowd goes wild. You know, I remember the first night I was in Philly, the Raw was on with Vince, came down, and it was after TLC. And I remember watching it at the hotel room because they had cable. And it was amazing because it got to the point where I got behind Roman and I hated Roman. I didn't hate him per se. I just hated the fact he was being buried so much.
Yeah.
Because they didn't know what direction they were going with the guy. And then Vince came in and suddenly everything, all the bad shit just melted away. And it was like,
It was great. It was brilliant. I mean, we had a crowd chanting Roman, and I'm like, whoa, what is this? Like
in Philly of all places.
In Philly, I could not believe it. Like I was totally out of it. Wow. But all right. So we're gonna get into our topics, but first we're gonna take a break. I'm gonna play our song of the episode. I can't say song of the month because now I'm doing these things 2 times a month. So I'm going to run a quick song and a quick message, and we'll be back with our hot topics. This is Mega Ran, Matt Mania with special guest Michael Burhan. See you in a second.
Let's be realistic for a minute. Am I cooking? Huh? Let me take a look at this, huh? Is this what's happening in professional wrestling? Huh?
Bootleg kid, you feel me?
Heavy hitter. Suckers.
Off the cage and I'm ready, spit the flow to start. Ocean to ocean, I always sparked. Open emotion that's known to heart. Most of my posters are Owen Hart. Bitch, they call me Mick Foley. They told me rappers are stolen art, so I put these words on my homie. I was born to start if I'm rolling smart, and I'm motivated off the motor vaping. I've been hella vacant, I was on vacation. Now I'm back in place, and get it cracking, making tons of raps, making the lab all day. And let me get it straight, they told me don't fuck with the heavyweight. They still wanna push to the levee break. I wake every morning to get the cake, that's what it takes.
We for sale.
We for sale.
UPS, FedEx, demand.
Got that cash, if you need for bail. Who need a scale?
I got the scale.
Smoking marijuana. And girl, I know you wanna take another hit. Hot box of whip just like a sauna.
Legion of Doom, LOD. I'm an animal with that hook on me. Tag team champs, can't you tell? Lift heavyweight, this shit ain't frail. Straight from Mexico, we get them bails. Straight to AZ, them six gon' sell. Tell me, dog, how can I fail? When the weight's so heavy, it'll break the scale. Let's be real like Cypress. You niggas snakes like vipers. I'm the king of the rain, yo, highness. And I'm smoking that green, I'm flying. And it ain't coaches first class. I travel like I don't pack bags. If you book me and checks don't cash, I put the smack down on your bitch ass.
Yo, it's Mega Ram, Matt Mania. We're back. Thanks for sticking around. Real quick, I want to shout out my buddies T-Call and Collateral, who just dropped a wrestling-themed mixtape called Vader vs. Foley. It's out for free. It's on the SoundClouds and all that good stuff. Just go in and search it. Well, you'll probably get a match between Vader and Cactus Jack if you search that. But the second or third result is bound to be that mixtape, so go ahead and check it out. It's some great hip-hop with a lot of really cool classic wrestling references.
I just want to add one thing as well to that. Right. It's also, you can, if you want to find out what that story is about with Vader versus Foley, check out Mick Foley's book, Have a Nice Day. It talks in depth about that and what led to him losing his ear.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, man, they got some great stories. One thing that Foley says in like a lot of his talks is that Vader was so ahead of his time. You know, yeah, being a big guy who was agile and like, and I think he said it recently on Stone Cold's podcast, like, man, if he was around today, like, he'd be so over. Like,
yeah,
he's a guy that everyone would love in today's business. But anyway, so talking about classic wrestling, I'm going to talk about a classic moment that happened 17 years ago this week. I love to get into history. And this is one of the most infamous moments of pro wrestling. It is the 17th anniversary of the Finger Poke of Doom. That's correct. The Finger Poke of Doom. Let me give you a little background on it really quickly. And 17 years ago today, it was in Atlanta, Georgia. Hollywood Hogan defeats Kevin Nash in under 2 minutes to win the WCW World Championship. However, there were some big stories behind this. There was the joining of the two factions. The NWO had split and became the Wolfpack and the NWO Hollywood or something like that, the Black and White.
Yeah, otherwise known as Black and White. Yeah,
so we had Black and White, Black and Red, and they were a big thing. The Wolfpack, the red guys were the faces, and Hollywood's team was wreaking havoc. Now, what happens from here is when things get a little murky. January 4th, big match on Nitro. They get into the ring. They stand in front of each other, and Hulk Hogan taps Kevin Nash on the chest. Kevin Nash oversells it, falls to the ground, and is pinned. 1, 2, 3. Match is over. And a lot of people consider this the ending of, as well, of WCW.
It was a big slap in the face.
This was something that, you know, not even just insiders, but fans, everyone was completely disappointed. And And they feel like the business was insulted on that day. Now, big thing that made this even worse is that on orders of Eric Bischoff, the announcer, Tony Schiavone, and this is probably why he didn't wind up getting a WWF job, but on air, Tony Schiavone gave away the results of the Raw match that was taped and that was going on on, I think, USA Network at that time. I'm going to play that clip right here.
If you're even thinking about changing the channel to our competition, fans, do not. Because we understand that Mick Foley, who wrestled here one time as Cactus Jack, is going to win their world title. Going to put some butts in the seat.
That'll put people in the seats. And so what that did is it did something interesting. Instead of people laughing it off and continuing to watch WCW, you know what they did, Mike?
Yeah, they changed the channel. I changed the channel.
I did too. I said, oh, shoot, man, Kai's going to win? Let me see how this happens. And, it was great. And unfortunately, it completely backfired. Over 500,000 people also changed the channel.
We want to let you know that unlike us, they've got their show in the can. Their show's been taped. Later tonight, Mick Foley, who once wrestled here as Cactus Jack, is going to win their world title. I mean, that's going to be their world champion.
Yep.
And they watched Mick Foley beat The Rock with a bunch of help. I mean, it was like DX... Stone Cold, like everybody helped, but like it was great.
Yeah.
Nitro was still on the air after Raw was over, so so they not only give it away like 30 minutes before it was going to happen, but Nitro was able to go over there a lot of times. So after Mankind won, then you flip the channel back just in time to catch the poke and then the three count. Hogan, who hadn't been on TV in like a couple of months, had just got the title. The two factions got together. Goldberg is now out of the title situation. Well, let's not forget they
Yeah, because he hurt himself. It was like they did a bit where he smashed his hand through the window.
Yeah.
And basically broke his hand.
Oh,
and I'm sitting there, my eyes rolling. I'm sitting there going, okay, I think he's just broken his hand. So the number one contender's gone. Because you've got a belt that's been traded around by two guys from poking, and they also gave away results from Raw. And then afterwards, I watched this and just went, what is this show?
It's like they literally shot themselves in both foot and head at the same time. I don't know how they managed to do that on one episode, but like, oh man, let's not forget the whole Goldberg thing, how they completely like, you know, built him up to destroy it. Like, man.
But that's what happened. Again, one-dimensional character. You know, I'm not hating on Bill or anything. He made a lot of money doing what he was doing. But that was his gimmick. And once you've taken away the legs of that gimmick, there is no way to bring it back. And they killed everything about who Goldberg was. Then they had him swear on live TV in front of kids. And you're just like, please just get a gun and shoot me. What the heck? And then he cuts this weird ass promo afterwards, insulting Kevin Nash and saying, no, I'm a face, he's a heel. And I'm like, congratulations, you have just opened up the fucking business to people who just don't really care. You know,
man.
They just, it was literally, they did a better job than Triple H at burying the guy. It was just shh.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill, can you just take this like 20-pound weight and shove it in that forest? No.
Oh man, it was so bad. Oh.
It was.
And I was a huge Goldberg mark. Like I would go nuts. I loved it. And I think, I don't know, I guess a lot of those guys in the back just really didn't like the fact that he was getting so popular, or just, you know, the fact that they built this angle And then, you know, once they killed it, they didn't have anything else to stand on, you know. Well,
and, that's exactly it. Nash was the booker at the time, and he booked himself to win the title, which, again, is a no-no. You don't allow someone to book themselves to be a world champion. And he's just like, oh, guys, geez, it's just a belt. Every single interview that I've watched of him sitting there talking about it, and it's like, he goes, I'm all about what draws money.
Yeah.
Then draw money. You know, you didn't have to do that and cut the guy's nose to spite his face. But again, I think they were in trouble the moment, as JR put it, when if you look at the documentary, The Death of WCW, he says that they gave away the world title match with Goldberg versus Hogan on free TV.
They did. They could have built that up into a huge pay-per-view match.
It would have made billions in buys, and then they ended up basically throwing it all away on live TV. Yeah. It started our trend of giving away championship matches to try and compete with the other show.
But from the fans' perspective, I mean, that's great, don't you think? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I hate to think that Raw or Nitro even then doesn't mean anything. You know what I mean? I would like to think that you never know, a title change could happen on a TV show, you know?
Well, there's a right way to do it and the wrong way to do it. And I think what the WWE is currently doing with Roman, that was the right way to do it. You know, it was a very good way. You understood the reason behind it. There was merit. When you've got JJ Dillon on TV going, Hogan is going to be facing Goldberg tonight, I was like, yay. And then I thought about it and went, no.
Oh, I was excited. I'm like, oh, I'll be tuning in. And I mean, it worked for me. Like, I don't think I tuned to WWF that day, you know, just because I knew that this was going to happen. But they could have.
It's basically a big thing. But the issue being is, as I said, they could have done it where Hogan could have weaseled out of the match.
Yeah.
Or like ran. And then next show, you know, the next pay-per-view, which was going to be, they were going to do a pay-per-view after that anyway. Yep. I think there was two shows before the pay-per-view, two Nitros.
Yeah.
They could have had Hogan like go, okay, you got away this time, but there's nowhere to run when we're going to have a lumberjack match at this pay-per-view, you versus Goldberg, nowhere to hide. Boom. Ultimately, you're selling tickets because people want to see Hogan. Hogan was white hot at that point. And then when you did the whole finger poke of doom situation, Hogan had no heat, and you're giving the title to someone who doesn't deserve it in the fans' eyes, has no reason to carry that belt, was at like 2 months ago running for president of the United States, apparently, according to Jay Leno. But, you know, and you had all this stuff going on, and after that finger poke of doom, Hogan and WCW just didn't happen anymore for me. I think they should have. They kind of jumped the shark a little bit, and they needed to kind of go back and refresh things by allowing the smaller card, the mid card, lower card guys to kind of rise up the ranks and build the company again. But instead, they just kept poking with Hogan, and it was like, you just won't stay dead.
Oh man, another interesting thing I just found out about this match is that I guess the day after, or maybe it was the next week, before Goldberg was out of the situation, Nash offers Goldberg a rematch on Nitro.
Yep.
And then he gets arrested halfway through the show for stalking Miss Elizabeth. I don't know if you remember this. And then he gets released from the police station later because she couldn't keep her story straight. But unfortunately, he didn't make it back to the arena in time to compete in the match. And found out later that the skit didn't make any sense when the police station was right across the street from the from the Georgia Dome. But anyway, so many things didn't make sense. So Nash takes the poke, takes it like he got shot in the chest, and gets covered. Everybody comes to the ring. It's all great. It's all good. And Nielsen ratings show that almost 700,000 people switched to Raw around that time when that happened. And the final ratings,
I did too.
Nope. And the final ratings for that night was 5.7 for Raw, 5.0 for Nitro, and probably the very end of WCW's last chance of trying to come back or to compete at that point. And the next week on Raw, there were signs in the crowd that said, Mick Foley put my butt in this seat.
Yeah, and it also, the Smarks have basically taken that term. The amount of wrestling podcasts that I've been on where people who have no affiliation with the business will come out and go, that'll put butts in seats. And I just look at them and go, yeah, I you're just copying Shivani, aren't you? Oh, bless you.
Oh, I didn't know that that's become a bit of a thing.
It's a smarky term. Everybody, like, if you ever see someone talk about a match with two bad wrestlers or even wrestlers they think are bad, they will always use the term, that'll put butts in seats. And I always sit there with a little glee in my eye going, you got that. You were watching WCW, weren't you? You were. You lovely little person, you.
Wow. Yeah. All right. So next topic. Let's get into some current stuff. 2016 Royal Rumble is a few weeks away. And it has been decided as of last night's Raw that the Rumble match will decide the world champion. Thoughts on that? First of all, a little history. I'm always in the history. The last time this has happened, do you know the last time this happened?
Yes.
It was 1992.
Mm-hmm.
And the winner was, do you know?
The Nature Boy himself, Ric Flair. Woo!
Indeed. Yes. Flair won after coming in at number 3. And yep. Because of some stuff that I actually don't know, and if you do know this, I would love for you to shed some light. Why was the title vacant at this time? I think like Hogan got stripped, and yes, there was some stuff going on with him and the Undertaker. But I don't think I was watching it this time. So
basically, at Survivor Series, the Undertaker beat Hogan to win the championship. Flair put the chair in the ring when he performed the Tombstone. Hogan protested it. They saw the footage. Taker got stripped of the championship. So they were like, "Okay, we're good." Jack Tunney. Remember Jack Tunney, people?
Jack,
this
buddy.
Weird Canadian dude who just come in and just like, we are booking this match on conclusive evidence that we feel that the Undertaker has done this in this match and blah blah blah, but Hogan will not gain the championship back. We are holding the championship up in a 30-man Royal Rumble, and it's like everyone's like, ah! And the reason, apparently the backstage reason, is that Hogan did not want to face Flair at all, because they were going to do this whole unification thing with the big gold belt to say that who's the bigger champion and all that stuff. And Hogan didn't want to play ball, so Vince stripped him of the championship by doing this angle, and which I thought was a very smart played angle, because I never knew any of the Hogan being a bit of a political
we didn't know that at that time, so that's good.
And he had a contract. Apparently his contract was pretty similar in WWE than it was in WCW, where he would have final say over who would go over him or if he would go over them, yeah, and, you know, say who he would face. So they did this, and the Undertaker lost the championship when it was held up at the Royal Rumble. Once it was held up, Flair basically won the championship again due to shenanigans. I believe the final person he eliminated was the Macho Man.
I think it was Macho Man or Sid.
Yeah. Sid went after Hogan because they had their thing going on. Because for those who don't know, Sid was actually pegged to be the next Hogan of the company. Then Vince realized he was crazy and went, no, we're not doing that. So they set that out. And it was a great match. The Rumble meant more than it ever meant before, because this was before the time when the Rumble was number one contenderships, you know? Yeah. People don't know, but they used to do the Rumble for lulls.
Yeah, it was just for fun.
Yeah, for fun and cash prizes and stuff.
So with that being said, that this being a super important match, and you know, it was way back then, do you think now that this will add some more excitement to this Rumble and make it one of the better ones, you think?
They are, it adds a lot of pepper and spice to this Rumble. And the thing I think the WWE should do is make it a 40-man, like they did with Berto Del Rio, the one he won, because it would make it a lot more entertaining. Because imagine Roman having to go through 40 guys, you know. Not in that way, folks.
Well, I don't want to imagine that. Seriously, what if, I think the topper with that would be like to make him draw number one, you know?
He needs to draw number one, because I think he needs to show he's got balls, and that he's ready for anything Vince is going to throw at him. And I think if Roman wins, this will solidify him. But what I'm thinking is going to happen is they're going to probably have him last until the final two, eliminate whoever the second person is. It's going to be someone we're not very likely, we didn't even know was working with the authority. Then that person's going to be dangling on the outside. Roman's going to be in there while Vince is going to like basically chew him out and distract him. And then that person will jump in and dunk him over, losing the title without being pinned, without submission, nothing. And it's going to go to, and whoever wins it is going to shake Vince's hand. I've got a funny feeling we're going to see a screw job, but I don't think it's going back to Sheamus. Sheamus has literally no heat.
No.
It's like even with the match on Raw, the heat was kind of focusing on Vince rather than Sheamus.
Yeah, and I do not want to see another Sheamus Roman Reigns match. I think we've had enough of those. Which I think makes sense to do this and put Reigns in the match rather than to have a world title match, you know, because who else would he face, you know, at this point?
The WWE is so low on, like, basically wrestlers at the moment. They've kind of roped themselves into a corner. Like, you've got Ambrose, who's currently now in the Intercontinental title feud. They kind of, like, gave him the belt to say, thanks for putting up with our crap. And sorry about Survivor Series. And he would be the perfect choice to face Roman, but he's currently in his own thing. Kevin Owens is another one who I think is ready, but they've got to pull the trigger on him. And I think the Royal Rumble would be the best place for him to do it, because it also gives him gloating power, because he wins the championship without having to do much but toss Roman over the ropes.
Yeah,
you know, wow. this is a golden moment.
Cool. That would be a cool thing to see. I read some things that Owens wants Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, and he's trying to get them to give it to him. I don't know if that'll happen, but what do you think about that?
I would love that. I think two of these guys, they've got very much a hard hitting smash mouth type of style. They call it the Japanese strong style.
Yeah.
Lesnar freaking lives and breathes that style.
Yeah.
He's a beast. You know, I think KO could do wonders with him. I think KO could do stuff to him that no one else has ever done before. Mm. Just because the fact he has a mixture of high flying ability with that smash mouth, strong style, whereas Lesnar's the kind of guy that will beat the crap out of you and suplex you into oblivion. So these two in a match, I would say I could smell money. You know, I really could smell money, but that's dependent on whether or not they will allow it. Because at the moment, Owens is currently, as I said, there's two positions for him at the moment, being the top heel or facing Lesnar. And I think if he gets given the championship, I don't see him going for Lesnar unless they decide to go for a triple threat and have Roman and Lesnar versus Owens, which I would probably die happy.
I wouldn't mind seeing that. Well, right now, Kevin Owens has his hands full, I'm using air quotes, in a blood feud, air quotes, with Neville. So he's a little busy, but hopefully they'll wrap that up and get him into the big picture.
I think it's all, what I'm looking at the moment is, I think they're building all these guys to the Rumble. Like, even Heath Slater got time on Raw this week.
Yeah.
And him, you know, talking about his intentions with his new army of friends, who all make any sense whatsoever, basically to go out there and do their thing. And for me, I can see a lot of lower mid-card guys kind of rising to the occasion. I'm going to see New Day. I've got a funny feeling we're going to see a funny Kofi spot happen.
Oh, yeah, we got to have that, which is interesting, though, because, I mean, Kofi's usually been a face during these things when he does something amazing. So I wonder if he's going to break out any, you know, heroics as a heel. But looking forward to that.
Did you see the Punk Q&A panel that he had? And people were just like, why do New Day work so well? And he just went, they don't give a shit. Because they stopped caring about whether or not they're going to, like, be in a position to win championships. They're just doing them.
Yep.
I kind of agree with them a bit. They just do them. And it works. It's fun. And I think part of it, a part of their claim is, if Kofi does it, he's going to be very arrogant about it. So he'll probably end up back in the ring, and then he'll, like, you know, be schwazy a little bit about it. You taunt the crowd a little bit and then get dunked out.
And then get thrown out, yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of New Day this week on Raw was interrupted by none other than Y2J, who made a return and says that he is back, and he entered himself into the Rumble and said that he is back to save the company. I don't know how much of that was shoot stuff or how much of that is, I don't know, him just talking to hype it up. But what do you think of the prospect of Jericho coming back somewhat full time? And do you think he'll make an impact? Because I noticed, because I do my research, there are no Fozzy tour dates on the horizon. So he could be coming back for an extended amount of time. What do you think?
From what I've been told is he's had his agent tell him that he needs to be more prominent on WWE TV because his face sells tickets. Like, basically, in order for people to see, oh, look, that dude's famous, that will sell tickets to his concerts. At the moment, he's been trying to stay off of TV, and that's kind of killing any heat he has. But to me, I think it's kind of been there, done that. I know a lot of people are going to be like, no, Jericho's amazing. He is, but he's been there, done that. It's one of those things where I think he's overstayed his welcome a little bit. I can understand why he's coming back, but I just don't see any big splashes happening with him. He may win an IC belt. He may win a US title belt or even a tag title run with somebody, but I just don't see him going for the main event belt.
Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, I think if he did, I mean, come on, he'll definitely, if he goes heel champion, he'll definitely have a lot more heat than Sheamus. So, I don't know. What if he's the guy? What if he's the guy who tosses out Roman at the end and shakes hands with Vince?
Well, he has some heat with Roman and Dean anyway. So
that's right.
Do you remember that match they had with the Wyatts and he cost them the match? And then he just like, what did he do? He shoulder bumped Dean Ambrose,
Ambrose
and
yeah.
Ring. Yeah.
I was at that one. I was at, that was Night of Champions in Houston.
Yeah, and Reigns was like, what the hell was that? And he was just like, it's my bad. You know, obviously that glory hog wanted to basically take the pin and it backfired on him. It's his own fault.
Yeah.
You know, I thought we had it, blah, blah, blah. I made the call. But I would have liked, you know, I could see a continuation of that where that happens and, you know, he points directly back to that. That would, because that could like extend that storyline a little bit more and flesh it out a bit and understand the reason why he did it. You know, like I'm Chris Jericho and I always do what's best for business. That I would pop to that point. But I think he would be a transitional champion. I don't see him in the long haul holding that belt. He would probably hold it for a few months. Reigns would get it back and then we're back to square one again. I think whoever they get to shake Vince's hand, it's going to be someone who's doing it for the long term. So I think Jericho is back, but he's probably back to job.
Okay. All right. Moving on now, my last topic is New Japan Pro Wrestling. We had an event this past week, Wrestle Kingdom 2016. Reactions. Did you catch this?
I caught some of it. And I also caught what happened to AJ Styles, where his the Bullet Club basically turned on him.
Yeah.
They totally destroyed him. Watching it, and they even did a move that by the way, who's ever if you're ever in Philly and Ring of Honor's there, get the tickets. They're extremely cheap and they are amazing to watch. You know, I can't stress enough how amazing it is. Because I saw AJ Styles and the Young Bucks representing the Bullet Club on Ring of Honor show. Mm-hmm. But they did a move where he picked up Styles, got him in a Styles clash, the Young Bucks gave him a super kick, and then they planted him, and then there was two sides to the Bullet Club. You know, sitting there going, oh, you know, are they going to turn on him? Are they going to help him? Are they going to turn on him? And then they all did the two sweet thing and started beating the crap out of AJ Styles. It was kind of weird to see it happen, but I understood the reason why it happened because he's, according to rumors, several sources, he's now signed a deal with WWE to debut on NXT. So I could see it. I can see the fact that he's doing what's best for his family now, you know, in terms of money. And as a whole, I can't wait to see what Styles can do. As for the Bullet Club, apparently a few more of those members have actually signed contracts as well, including Luke Gallows, who those guys probably remember was Festus. Biscuits and Gravy, one of my favorites. make you a man. And so he's coming back. Then you've got the other guy, what's his name? He looks like he's a bald guy who wears there's nothing really about him that makes him stand out, and I'm trying to think what his name is.
Talking about Carl Anderson.
Carl Anderson, that's it. Okay. He's kind of has a Stone Cold thing going on. He's like one of those guys to fight. Again, he's a great talent. He's good for what he does. He's won the tag titles on numerous occasions. He's been signed, and a Japanese wrestler as well, who Styles actually faced at the pay-per-view, was signed. So I'm looking at it. I'm looking how it would benefit NXT. I think it's going to benefit it greatly. I did talk to Brandon a little bit about Wrestle Kingdom, and in honest, to God, apparently it's probably one of the best shows and should hit the top 500 in terms of match of the year.
Wow.
But the Japanese always, if you've ever gone back to see a Japanese match, their strong style, these guys they work the level that you would always see the new up-and-coming guys work. And as you said, in the Attitude Era, where they were hungry, and they would work like that all the time, and it was just amazing. I think there's only a couple of guys there who are making bank when it comes to indie, and that's like the Young Bucks.
Yeah.
But everybody else just like will push and push and starve themselves. And I think with Styles now, with the opportunity he's got in NXT, he's set in Florida. He's near his family. He's got no issues in terms of what he has to do. And I could see him become the next NXT champion once Balor moves up and Joe solidifies himself as the heel champion. I would love to see AJ Joe part 3.
Yeah. I want to see Balor and AJ. That's what I want to see.
Two of the greats in terms of phenomenal athleticism and mic work as well. And plus, both these two have history from the Bullet Club. So I don't see why not. And as far as I'm concerned, I will catch Wrestle Kingdom when I have the time, probably tonight, to just sit down and go through the pay-per-view. But it was one of those where I had to kind of choose between that and Raw today. So I chose to watch Raw and wasn't disappointed.
No? Okay. No. Well, good. So I wasn't, I got to say, between the last podcast I did was right after TLC. Since then, I wasn't really happy with Raw, but I got to say the last few episodes have been really good.
Yeah.
And I think they're turning the corner a little bit, and they're getting it together. It's been, it's not an excruciating 3 hours.
No.
At this point.
I think the worst part of Raw this week had to be the Divas match, and it was nothing on Becky. It was just this whole Charlotte heel turn thing that they're doing at the moment. They're doing it so poorly.
Yeah.
To the point where, and she doesn't know as well what kind of match she's having. Like when she had that match with Paige, it was supposed to be after, name dropping Reed Flair, you're thinking these two are going to kill each other in the ring.
Yeah.
And the pace was so slow and sloppy. You're like, what the fuck is this? and the same goes for Raw. It's like Becky challenges Charlotte. Charlotte looks pissed off. And you're thinking, okay, she's going to take more liberties in the ring and be like more bitchy. Nope.
Yeah.
Slow down pace again. And I'm just like, I don't know if you're doing it on purpose or you need more seasonal training, but you need to stop with these stupid slow-paced matches when your character is supposed to be someone who's brash, who's cocky, just like your dad, and who's arrogant.
Yeah.
You don't go around wrapping someone in your legs and doing a butt bump and calling that a slam. That just doesn't work for me. And it makes me annoyed because she's done so much better when she was on NXT. Charlotte could put down a throwdown, amazing match with anyone when she was NXT Women's Champion. Seeing her with the Divas title just makes her look just like the Bellas, and it's really sad.
It's just not working out like I'm sure like they all thought it would. I don't know. But
to me, if I was a betting man, I would book something like a championship scramble for all the Divas and just have all these girls go at it. All the girls are part of the feud. Team Bad, Charlotte, Team Bella. Becky, everyone in there, even add a few other divas in there as well and just go at it and see how it works. Like kind of a, pin, first one who gets the pin count has to hold it on for like 10 seconds in order to basically become champion. And then you have those preliminary champions, and it goes and it keeps going and going until eventually the one person who actually ends up, by the time the match is finished, as the champion, is the person who becomes, you know, the Divas champion. So they can do a lot to spice it up. And these girls are workers, so don't be afraid to give them a tables match or give them like a fucking, you know, lumberjack match or even a no disqualification match where they're just beating the crap out of each other. Because if the storyline permits it, I don't see why not. You know, you don't have to use chairs all the time or you don't have to use tables all the time, but you can sell the match by making this more of a fight than someone trying to do butt bumps and call it a suplex.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I think that's really all I got for today, unless there's anything else. But if you are listening, make sure if you haven't watched yet, I would definitely recommend checking out Wrestle Kingdom. That would be my recommendation for this week, is to make sure you're watching Wrestle Kingdom. I saw a headline somewhere that says WWE has declared war against New Japan, because I guess all these things are happening at the same time with them signing a bunch of their guys. The WWE Network just launched in Japan, so they're really, really going hard at them. So, but anyway. Definitely take a look at it. Every time I've watched some New Japan stuff, I'm always into it. It's great action, and I enjoy it. So, and it might be the last time you see those guys in a New Japan ring. So,
and also think about it as well. They do a lot of their talking in the ring rather than having the commentators try to sell you the match.
Yeah.
Which is one of the big things. Also, go to a forum that I'm a part of. I'm one of the admins there, and it's a nice little forum for like wrestling, MMA, and stuff. It's called facebook.com/wrestlerevolution. It's a wrestling MMA revolution, and it's a really good forum. You know, we talk wrestling, and we can also help you guys out if you need your fix on New Japan, WWE, and all that stuff. We'll send you basically where to go. So take it out there, discuss, and talk wrestling, talk MMA, talk anything you guys want, and we'd love to have more people on board.
All right, and there it is. Thank you so much for tuning in to another action-packed episode of Matt Mania, my first of the new year, 2016. Make sure you get out and make it a great one. I know everybody says, this is my year, but it takes action, so get out and do something cool and make it happen. And as always, keep your shoulders off the mat. It's Mega Ran. It's Matt Mania. Happy 2016. I'll see you on the road. Peace.
Don't forget to check out our other programs, like Bits, Rhymes, and Life, monthly on an early show network. Get equipped, fool.